Welcome to the Teaching Journeys podcast, hosted by Dave Roberts. Humanity possesses a unique skill, the ability to pass knowledge from one generation to the next. This podcast embraces that ability, offering learning opportunities through conversations with extraordinary guests. Dave aims to leave a positive mark on individuals around the world. So before you dive into today's episode, please share this podcast with your network, including friends, family, and colleagues. And please consider leaving a rating or review. Your support makes all the difference.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Teaching Journeys podcast. I'm your host, Dave Roberts, and today it is my pleasure to have as my guest, Carrie Cooper. Carrie Cooper, LCSW, is the owner of Carrie Cooper Holistic Therapy in Northern New Jersey. In her private practice, she counsels teens and works to give them the tools they need to navigate life. Carrie takes a holistic approach to therapy, looking at the whole person, not just their symptoms. Carrie is the author of Mental Health Uncensored, 10 Foundations Every Parent Needs to Know, a book designed to give parents steps on how to improve their child's mental health. Her second book is a workbook for teens, Mental Health Uncensored, 10 Foundations Every Teen Needs to Know. She is a speaker and writer who helps educate teens and parents on the topics teens face in everyday life. She is a graduate of the University of Pennsylvania and continues to further her education by obtaining additional certifications in her field, one of her favorite pastimes. When Carrie isn't busy working with teens, she is busy with her own four children and her flock of chickens. She can be reached at Carrie at CarrieCooperHolisticTherapy.com and on Instagram at CarrieCooperHolisticTherapy. And with that, Carrie, welcome to the Teaching Journeys podcast. I am looking forward to a great conversation with you today. And if any of your chickens want to join, they're more than welcome.
The chickens are trying to keep themselves warm in the coop with this cold weather we're having.
I can imagine. How many chickens do you have?
Started with four, and now we're down to only two. Two, unfortunately, have passed away.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that. And, I get it. Kids, chickens, and a driving practice, there's a lot of categories to be juggling at the same time. But I know we met, I think it was through a podcast guest forum on social media. You highlighted your skills and abilities and your background. And the last 14 years or so of my life, I've been a firm believer in holistic therapy. I'm very familiar with the challenges that teens and their parents have experienced. And so your background spoke to me both on the holistic standpoint and the fact that I'm very vested in seeing the young adults that I teach succeed. So I thought you'd be a great fit for the podcast, and I've been looking forward to the conversation for a while now.
Thank you. I've been looking forward to this conversation as well, because it spoke to me that you work with the college kids, and I work with so many college kids, so I always like to chat about them.
Yep, and I figured it was going to make for a really good organic discussion.
Yes.
My first question for you, and I ask this of all of my podcast guests, is tell our listeners about the experiences that have shaped your life path, and particularly those experiences that cultivated your passion to work with parents and teens.
Absolutely. So I was really fortunate that I knew while I was in high school that I wanted to be a therapist. I had my path set out for me, and I knew I always wanted to work with teens. And primarily that's because of my own middle school and high school experience. It was not easy. It was really challenging. Although in college, I did really well academically. I did not do well academically in middle school and high school. 20 years later, I found out I was, dyslexic, and that was part of it, but it didn't come easy to me. So there was a challenge that way. Socially, there was a challenge, and there was just never that adult to talk to without judgment. And I always thought to myself, kids struggle. Kids are making dumb decisions, but if they have that adult where they could talk to without judgment, they're going to be able to gain tools to put them on the right path. And that's really why I wanted to do what I wanted to do. And I saw a lot of my friends struggle as well. So that led me on my journey of becoming a therapist. So originally I went the very traditional path, graduate school and jumping into, the normal modalities really of therapy. But at some point I said, we're missing something. We are so missing something. These kids are getting therapy. At times I was working with an entire group, psychiatrists, group therapies, and they're getting better, but they're not getting 100%. And I feel like we're missing a puzzle piece here. So that's what led me on the holistic journey. And it was actually my own daughter, when she was very young, would have really awful tantrums, not like normal, typical toddler tantrums. And through many doctors and tests, we found out she had a dairy allergy, which was completely changing her behavior. Who knew? Once we removed that, she had typical toddler tantrums, but completely manageable. And I thought to myself, how many kids have I treated where there's an allergy, where something else is happening, where we're not looking at the full picture? And that's what started kind of my deep dive into everything holistic. And now when a kid comes into my office, I don't just talk about what are your symptoms. I don't just give them the cognitive behavioral therapy tools or DBT tools, but I also say, how are you sleeping? How are you eating? Are you seeing daylight? Are you moving your body? Because all of these things, and I have dived into the research of all of this, it matters. Mm-hmm. And we're so quick to just forget the foundations.
I agree. And the thing that has always been a bugaboo for me is how quick we are to diagnose children with a mental health condition.
Yes. Now,
you mentioned something with, dairy allergies. I mean, if you take a look at some of the kids who are diagnosed with ADHD, mm-hmm. could be just due to the processed foods they're eating, which, and your processed sugars, which are going to make them hyperactive anyway. If a child has experienced a significant loss in the home, or a teenager, or whatever, it's going to reflect in their behavior. It doesn't mean they're ADHD. It doesn't mean they're bipolar. It simply means that there may be something going on. And the first step that I learned as a therapist of differential diagnosis is that before you diagnose with a mental health condition, you rule out any particular physical condition or change in a social situation that can account for the behavior that you're seeing. If it is a physical condition or a change in an individual's social stratosphere, then you deal with that and see if the behavior stabilizes. And I think too often, I think you're right, Carrie, we miss those foundations. The first foundation is the first step of differential diagnosis. We go right to diagnosis. And if that diagnosis isn't accurate, treatment is not going to work.
I'm so happy to hear you mention that, because it's not being looked at, unfortunately. Is there something physical going on? Has there been a big change? And instead, just a diagnosis is put on these children, and then the medication's not working. And then the kid's like, why is the medication failing? And it's like, well, you're being treated for the wrong thing.
Yeah. And with kids, you have to rule out or rule in developmental challenges. What is normal at one stage of development may not be normal at another stage of development, but you have to look at developmental milestones. What is the age of that child? What is atypical behavior in this particular developmental stage? What behavior that appears to be abnormal may be normal depending on the child's stage of development. And all of that has to be weighed into consideration before we do anything, which is why I'm a firm believer with teenagers that in many cases, traditional talk therapy by itself doesn't work.
Right. They need more, like just tools. Mm-hmm. A healthy lifestyle. That alone could do so much.
And I also like how you establish a relationship with a teenager, with a young adult, is that you try to level the playing field where there's not a hierarchy. And so many times I hear from students that it's kind of like an us versus them mentality. I can't talk to an adult because I feel like I'm being looked down upon, or I feel like I'm being invalidated. I feel like I'm not being heard. The thing I've found in working with teenagers, they're a blast.
Mm-hmm.
As long as you give them options, you kind of meet them a little bit of where they're at. You don't take half of what they do seriously, but what they are serious about, you pay attention to. And you break down that hierarchy of, like, look, I can learn as much from you as you can learn from me. This is a collaborative process. Let's learn from each other. Let's see together what we can do to improve the skills that you need to succeed in life.
Absolutely. One of the best parts of my job is when we're able just to laugh together, because there are just funny moments of life. And when they share those with me and we are able to just laugh in my office, It's fantastic. And, you know, they do feel like I'm not here to judge them. Like we have all, you know, none of us are perfect and we all go through these developmental stages. Our brains are not even developed fully when we're in high school or college, and they're going to do things that, you know, hopefully later we can kind of laugh about and then talk about, but they're not going to be perfect. And that's perfectly fine.
Yeah. I mean, we didn't come into this life to lead a perfect existence, but so many times they feed into messages that they get from adults, from other authority figures, that success is key. And they will interpret that as I have to be perfect. And as I tell my students, you can be excellent, but you don't need to achieve perfection in the process.
That's all that matters is the trying. And, you know, I tell kids all the time, you are going to fail a million times. And that's a good thing, because if you're not failing, then you're not actually trying. You're not trying to improve yourself. You're not trying to do something that you're going to enjoy. You're just playing it safe.
Yeah. And anytime we fail, it's information that we can use to get better. Anything that we experience, good or what we perceive not to be good, is information that is there for our personal growth. If we choose to use it for our personal growth.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about the nature of the work that you do with teens and parents. I know you have an integrated approach. I believe it's an integrated solution-focused therapy, but I know there's more to it than just that title. But tell us about the work that you do with parents and teens and the challenges that parents and teens both typically present to you when they come to your office.
Well, you know, right now I work with a lot of kids that suffer with a lot of anxiety and a lot of depression. And before I'm going to slap a diagnosis on it, you know, I'm going to say, okay, this is how you're feeling 100%. These are the symptoms 100%, but let's start digging. And I really bring them both down to the foundations. And one of the foundations that is typically the easiest to kind of look at and examine and change is those physical foundations. They absolutely matter. They matter in our mental health. So when I'm talking to a teenager who is up until 2 a.m, and then getting up at 6:30 in the morning for school, they are sleep deprived. And as parents, we get that when it's the toddler stage. We all joke about like, oh, my kid's cranky, they missed their nap. But we forget about it as those kids get older and out of that nap time. But it's the same. If they are sleep deprived, they are not going to be able to problem solve. They are not going to be able to focus at school. They are going to be irritable. They are going to be moody. And we forget that. So how do we start addressing any of their symptoms of mental health when it could just be a simple sleep deprivation?
One of the things we were talking before we started recording, that sleep deprivation is a big issue among teenagers, among college students, and probably more so than we even realize.
Yes.
What do they disclose as the cause of sleep deprivation, besides being on their portable devices for all hours of the night?
There are two main things that come up. One is the devices, but not only is it that they're scrolling all night long and then losing track of time and staying up late, it's that during the day, they're scrolling so much that they're unable to be productive and unable to get things done in a timely manner. Especially the high school kids who, when they tell me they're having 5-6 hours of homework, I said, no, you're not. How much of that time are you actually on your phone compared to how much time are you actually focused on your schoolwork? So because they're constantly interrupted with the scrolling, with the Snapchat, with all of that, everything takes them longer. So now they're not winding down until much later. And when they're winding down, they're scrolling through their phone. The other issue that I hear a lot about is, well, when I go to lay down, I have a lot of thoughts. Well, right, because you haven't been processing anything all day long. You've just been going and scrolling. Like you didn't have a chance to actually take a step back. So those are the two things that I really noticed. But not only is this a massive issue with our college kids and high school students, and more of an issue than people realize, it's a massive issue in our adults. The amount of adults who are not properly sleeping is skyrocketing. And, you know, one of the reasons my second business is I'm a certified sleep science coach and I work with adults on their sleep. I was out to dinner one night and all of my friends were talking about something in a group chat. And I was like, I wasn't on this group chat. I don't know about this. And they said, it's our 2 a.m. group chat. We know you sleep, so we didn't put you on it. I said, none of you are sleeping at 2 a.m. What are you doing? One was exercising, one's doing dishes, one's catching up on her work. How are we not prioritizing sleep? And I think it comes from that culture of you have to be busy. You always have to be busy. You always have to be doing something. And that is not the way to go about life. That's going to lead to a lot of issues.
Yep.
It is okay to not be busy.
Yeah. I mean, solitude is a good thing. It allows us to recharge. It allows us to go within, and it allows us to develop some clarity about ourselves and about what our next steps are in terms of what our life goals it is we want to achieve. So yeah, solitude is a good thing.
Absolutely. So when we're just go, 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 that's a problem. And then it leads into poor sleep as well, because it's this go, go, go. So they're really very connected. And, you know, one of the things I actually write about in my book is one of the basic steps besides the physical stuff is you have to be able to say no. And we have to teach our children that it's okay to say no, that they don't have to be people pleasers and do everything for everybody else if that's not good for them. And I think too often we just tell them, oh, join the 10 sports teams and do all of this, when they don't necessarily want to do that. And I think it's okay to listen to them and to not have them overscheduled and not too busy. But parents as well, like, it's okay to say no to things that you don't want to do. I mean, listen, there are things in life that we just have to do. We all get that. But you don't have to feel pressured to saying yes to everything. And I will admit, I was one of those parents early on. I said yes to everything. Yes, I'll run that fundraiser. Yes, you know, I'll have this party at my house. Yes, I'll help with that. And at some point, I took a step back and I said, I'm tired and I'm frustrated. And what do I really want to be doing? And I really toned down my schedule. And now, you know, on a weekend, somebody will say to me, oh, what are you doing this weekend? I say, nothing. I'm enjoying my kids. We're hanging out. And everyone's like, I'm so busy. I don't want to be so busy. That's no longer a badge of honor to me.
No, if anything, it just, I think, elevates stress. And I think it, once you're starting to do for everybody else and not do for yourself, it causes a lot of resentment. It causes burnout. And I'm sure you run into that too with a lot of your teenagers who are trying to be everything to everybody.
Yes.
So one of the things I hear you working with parents and teenagers on is setting appropriate boundaries.
100%. And even sometimes it's, you know, I actually look at their calendar. Tell me what you're actually doing. You know, where are you spending your energy and your time? And the kids who tend to be the people pleasers tend to have the moms, it's normally moms, who are also the people pleasers. And I tell the moms all the time, I know you're trying just to help everyone and to be everything to everybody, but look at what you're modeling for your child. And that could be as basic as, you know, telling your child, you could do your own laundry. I don't need to do that for you. And I mean, that's a whole nother discussion. That is something I also get into in my practice and in my book, is that it is okay to give these children responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
It is good for them. They need the life skills. They need to learn how to manage their time. And as a parent, you don't need to do everything for them, because that also builds that resentment in the moms. And then a huge argument erupts because the mom already feels burnt out and not appreciated.
Yep. Yep. And that causes the more rifts in the family system and more communication issues and, you know, just more division.
Yes.
Speaking of your books, I know you have two.
I do.
I know the first one sounds like it's primarily for parents, and the second sounds like it's primarily a workbook for teenagers. So why don't you elaborate on both of those books, the titles and the content and what you want parents and teens to take away from your work?
It was really during COVID when all of this happened. So COVID, there was just an extreme blow up of mental health, of just kids in crisis, families in crisis. It is not easy to be isolated. It is not easy to feel like you have no options, no choices. For these kids, they were losing things. They were losing proms, sports seasons. That means something to them. It was a lot of loss, COVID. I had so many parents calling me trying to get in, you know, virtually for their kids to see me. And like every other therapist in my area, I was beyond full. I couldn't take on any more children. My colleagues couldn't take on any more kids. And I said, I need a resource out there so they could start somewhere to help their kids. And that's where I started writing Mental Health Uncensored, 10 Foundations Every Parent Needs to Know. And it's broken into 5 physical foundations and 5 mental health foundations. and really, you know, how to shape life and the home environment to really promote good mental health, but really it's good daily habits. Mm-hmm. So I wrote that book and the parents really liked it, but some of them were telling me, but when I talk to my kids about doing it, they don't want to hear it. I said, you're right. Let me do my own workbook for them, because especially high schoolers, they want to do it on their own. And so I wrote the same type of book, but as a workbook for the kids. So when it talks about sleep, I give them the research. I break it down so they understand why it's actually important, and then tools on how to get it on track, and an entire, you know, guide on, all right, now track it. And how did you feel? And I connect all the dots for them. Mm-hmm. And even we're talking about friends and social circles. We talk about what does that look like? And I have an entire chart that I know teachers have used as well about friends. You're going to have your friends who are just your school friends, and those have different expectations. And to break it down, that way they are able to handle the social relationships better too. So they're both just tools for both parents and the teens to really be able to implement those steps.
Yeah, I think it's important, because I think one of the inaccurate assumptions that we make in therapy, and I used to do this, is that just because an individual is motivated to change meant that they knew how to change. And I've had clients tell me, you know, Dave, I want to change, but I don't know how. And there's a lot of truth to that, because particularly if they have not, for whatever reason, developed the necessary skill set to achieve their life goals, we need to find out, well, what is it that you need, and provide that foundation through specific tools, and then watch the insight kind of grow from there. But I think as therapists, I tell my students who want to be therapists, don't underestimate the importance of doing foundational skill building, because that's going to make the insight-oriented therapy much, much more powerful and much, much more meaningful.
100%. Kids so often are saying they feel isolated or lonely, or that, you know, their friends don't show up for them. When we start even looking at a chart of who do you consider to be your inner friends, like your best friends, they're, what you expect from them needs to be different than what you're expecting from school friends. And when you start breaking that down, they're like, oh, well, yeah, my good friend is really there for me. Right. Everybody else doesn't really have to be. There's different expectations. So then they all of a sudden start looking at it differently and realize maybe they're not so isolated. Maybe they do have better friendships than they think. But they were more just thinking as like a blanket statement, everyone needs to show up for me 100%. And that's just not the case. And I do talk a lot about that, because I think a lot of kids are struggling socially right now.
I think you're right. I think COVID set back a lot of young adults, particularly in the school setting, and I think we're still recovering from that to an extent. Plus, the other thing, you mentioned losses during COVID. A lot of young adults came closer to death than they've ever come close to, just on a global scale, which in and of itself, I would think what's going on in the world also has to contribute to their heightened anxiety, mm-hmm. particularly as they see it unfold on social media, which, as you know, is a hotbed for misinformation.
Yes.
And the other thing, and I'm sure you also talk to your young adults about developing their critical thinking skills as well, because that's especially now in the age of misinformation and the internet bombardment that we get, it's important for them, I think, to understand, you know, to look at things critically and say, where's this coming from? Is this a valid source? How does this align or not align with other information that I've heard? Who are reliable people or sources that I can check with for that type of validity? And I think that's something that critical thinking needs to be, I think, ingrained in. At the youngest age that we can start doing that, right, especially at the height of where they're still developing their decision-making skills, the better off I think we're going to be.
Yeah, critical thinking is so important. And along with that is trusting themselves. You know, and I always tell, when you're feeling like, no, this isn't right, something's off here, you need to start listening to that voice.
Yep.
And sometimes the noise around you is so loud that you don't hear that voice. Mm-hmm. But I do teach them, you got to take that step back and really think about you and trust yourself. What feels right for you?
Yeah. And the other thing, you know, as we were talking about misdiagnosis, and especially with young adults, one of the things, and I'm sure you've run into probably a lot of young adults who are very intuitive, have a very strong spiritual connection. They look at the world multidimensionally. A lot of times their minds are processing information at light speed, and their body isn't capable of processing the information that comes through them so quickly. So they become anxious. They may become depressed, particularly depressed at what they are seeing.
Yes. Yes.
And so for a therapist that does not understand the importance of holistic practices, and particularly the work that PH Atwater has done with Indigo Children, if they have not understood that, they're going to just diagnose us with this young adult with generalized anxiety disorder, PTSD, major depression, schizophrenia, bipolar, you name it. When in reality, it's that this is how they relate to the world. They relate to it very multidimensionally. And we need to understand that before we jump to any type of diagnosis or, you know, put them in a category that's going to damage them for the rest of their lives.
Yeah, we have to remember all the time that everybody is different.
Yep.
That's perfectly fine. And we need that in this world. So not everyone's going to fall into a box. And I have kids all the time. And of course, with social media and TikTok and all that, they come to my office and they're like, I have this diagnosis. I saw it on TikTok. And it's interesting because I can normally tell when there's been an influencer who's been talking about a mental health disorder on TikTok, because all of a sudden, everybody in my office is telling me they have that. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, wait a second, what's going on social media lately? And when they start telling me, I'm like, huh? Yeah, that you're all seeing it. And now you all think you have this. But it's so important for them to be able to take that step back and hold on. Is that what's really happening here? And I tell them all the time, I said, you know, we could sit here with a checklist of symptoms. And sure, I could diagnose you. But is that really what's happening? Is that really what's going on for you? Just because you're meeting some, you know, checkbox here doesn't mean that's who you are or what's happening. And it's also about, does this cause you negativity in your life?
Mm-hmm.
Some people with a certain degree of OCD, it causes them no negativity. It's great for them. Fantastic.
Yeah. I mean, they may that degree or less severity of OCD or obsessive, you know, we used to call it obsessive compulsive personality. These are the individuals that are organized and have lists, but it isn't in any way causing any type of debilitation in relation to their relationships or how they feel about themselves. It's just kind of, you want to call it an eccentricity of their behavior or character trait or a personality trait. Yeah. Then there's nothing abnormal about that.
Right. It's not diagnosable. You shouldn't be diagnosing it. You know, just because they can check off the box doesn't mean they should be diagnosed with that. I have a lot of kids who are very artistic and, you know, they kind of float from one project to the next and the parents are like, are they ADHD? No, they're artistic and they're kind of leaning into what feels right for them in the moment with how they want to work on their art. And that's perfectly fine.
Most artists I know are kinesthetic anyway. They're multisensory. They jump from one project to an X. They can multitask because that's how their brain works.
Yeah. And there's nothing wrong with that.
No.
Yeah.
I mean, it makes for a very fulfilling world when we have individuals that think differently, see the world differently, relate to the world differently, because we can all learn from that.
Right. So some of that needs to be honored instead of just jumping to that diagnosis and saying you don't fit in this box.
Yeah.
And I tell kids, like, it is okay to not fit into a box.
Mm-hmm.
Because they get wind of this and they think there's something wrong with them when there's not necessarily anything wrong.
No. I tell my students all the time, conventional wisdom is highly overrated. You can only be one person, and that's you. Do not subscribe to conventional wisdom. As long as who you are, how you're relating to the world is not hurting yourself, is not hurting anybody else, it's all good. Yeah. You see the world through your own eyes, not through the eyes of how somebody thinks you should see yourself. Just be yourself, because who you are is inherently beautiful anyway.
Yeah, and learning that is such a gift.
Yeah, and I tell my students that all the time. I said, if you don't think I can learn from you, you're mistaken, because I can learn a lot from you. And you add value to my life, every day of my life. And you need to know that if one of you decided that you were going to complete suicide and you thought that nobody would care, just remember, it's going to be one person who's always going to care. That's going to be me. I'll be saddened if I hear about that. And I know you probably deal with that too, with suicidal ideations with young adults. I know 19 is a particularly difficult age. Among college students, I think it's the second leading cause of death among college students now. So I'm sure you deal with that because of all the pressures that they're having difficulty dealing with on the outside, and also the peer pressure and pressure from their authority figures to say, well, you got to do it this way. Well, no, there's no such thing as you have to do anything any particular way. You do it a way that's comfortable for you.
Absolutely. And I think that that's, you know, just a different way of viewing our teenagers and our college kids. Instead of viewing them as they don't know anything and they just need to learn from us, we can learn so much from them and, you know, start to see how they see the world. And to be a part of that is fantastic.
Yeah, and I'm blessed every day that I have a new group of students that have become part of my extended family that trust me enough. They want to spend time with me. They want to learn, and they feel comfortable doing that, and that they could feel comfortable coming to me if they need to, if they have an issue, which I always put that out there. I said, if something, life is getting in the way of school, just let me know and I'll work with it. And you have to continually put that out there, Carrie, because, as you know, they don't trust that.
I know.
They don't trust that coming from an authority figure. They're going to say, well, really, does he really want to hear what's going on in my life? Well, yeah, you're damn right I do.
Right.
And with the teenager, don't make a promise or put an offer out there that you can't keep.
Nope, never. Trust is so important.
I never put them in a position where they're going to lie. I never used to ask them yes or no questions.
Right.
You know, so never put them in that position either. So tell me more about your integrated solution-focused approach with parents and teenagers. What does that involve? What are some of the, I know solution focus is very brief therapy. It's focused on problem solving, but I'm curious in terms of what other holistic strategies you utilize with solution focused therapy with parents and teenagers. Why don't you tell our audience a little bit about that?
In terms of the mental health one, we really actually break it down when you talk about solutions. I really teach my kids what anxiety is. I think that we talk about anxiety all the time, but we haven't really talked about how it works in the human body. I talk about anxiety is actually there for a reason. And when I break down what that looks like and how their body is responding, and even so much as, you know, when we go into fight or flight, a lot of the kids don't understand that it is normal for your heart rate to rise. That is an actually normal thing that is supposed to be happening when you're in fight or flight. That it is normal that all of a sudden you can't problem solve. Sometimes you can't even speak. Certain parts of your brain are actually turned off when you're in those moments. Once they start realizing that their body is not against them, that this is actually what is supposed to be happening during fight or flight, they seem to handle it so much better. They don't feel like it's too big for them. They feel like, oh, okay, I understand what's happening here. But then we talk about sometimes we don't need to be in fight or flight, even though our body's telling us we do. And why did that signal, you know, maybe get too extreme when it's not that extreme? And how do we go about saying, okay, let me take a second here to say what is truly happening? Is this a crisis? You know, am I safe? And I tell them to say that a lot. Am I safe? If you're safe in this moment, then you're not in crisis and you don't need to be in fight or flight. And one of the ways to then start bringing yourself down out of that fight or flight, not just through thoughts, relax your body. When your body's 100% relaxed, you can't be in fight or flight. So once they start gaining the knowledge of what anxiety really is, what it looks like, how to help control it, it makes more sense. Sometimes we give these kids too big of ideas when it comes to anxiety, like, oh, we'll start journaling all of your thoughts and feelings, and it'd be really overwhelming. Mm-hmm. I want to break it down to a more very simple step. Like, this is why it's happening. This is what it feels like. That is normal. And now how do we correct it? How do we get it back online? So I think that's one thing that's been really useful for a lot of my kids and the parents to hear, that your body's not against you, that it's doing what it should be doing. It's just thinks that something's a threat when it's not.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing could be just something simple as doing a mindful walk in nature. You know, because I know with young adults, physical activity is really important. So it just might be getting them moving. It might be doing a mindfulness activity. It might be teaching them how to meditate for a little bit. Maybe engage in a little bit of yoga. Do some different holistic things that will treat the body well and that are non-medicated. And if they built that into a, they build that into a practice, can also heighten their connection to something greater than themselves. Which begs my next question. I know you break down your work with parents and teenagers in the physical and mental. How much of that mental foundation is also based on spirituality as well, too?
So actually, I kind of put it under the physical, but I have an entire chapter about meditation.
Perfect.
So whether you want to call it meditation, prayer, whatever is comfortable for somebody, yoga, it's being able to be in the present moment. And it's practicing that. When we talked about that anxiety and that fight or flight, what I tell kids is that you have to come back to the present moment, not what may or may not happen or what did happen. And I say your brain, it's like a muscle. And when you practice being in the present moment, it's easier to get back there time and time again. And it's easier to stay there. I love a mindful walk because a lot of the kids will do that over meditation. And I definitely recommend that. Or even mindful eating, mm-hmm. we talk a lot about. Whatever it is where you are in the moment, grounded, going, okay, here I am. Here's my moment. What am I tasting? What am I seeing? What am I hearing? That connects you to the here and now. And that's really the key. You have to come back to the present moment time and time again. And I tell the kids all the time, what the worries you're telling me are future. It's not what's happening right now. Right now, you are sitting in my office talking to me. So we do. We talk a lot about, again, meditation, prayer, whatever somebody feels called to, whatever brings you back to that present moment. And I know for me, it's been so important in my life, making sure that I'm meditating every day. And it looks a little bit different every day how I do that. But oftentimes, people might find me in my car as I'm waiting at pickup for my kids. And my eyes are closed in my car and I'm listening to a meditation. So mm-hmm. you can fit it in, and for parents as well, fit it in.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of different forms of meditation. This is sitting in the lotus position and reciting a mantra. It's more than transcendental meditation. It could be just a walking meditation. It could be listening to music, just some very calming music, and closing your eyes and just getting out of your own head. So it could be a variety of different. There's so many different forms of meditation that anybody can just, based on their own individual preferences, can just pick one and say, yeah, this is going to get me back to the present moment. So yeah, I'm glad, because I know spirituality is a big piece that I know researchers have shown that individuals who have placed an importance on spirituality and or religious practices, that in and of itself could be protective against, you know, depression and anxiety and things when they feel that type of connection to something greater than themselves.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, so I definitely talk about meditation. I also talk about exercise. Exercise yep. is so important to move that body. And we've seen the research where, you know, exercise is just as effective as many antidepressants, if not more effective. Yep. And it doesn't take a lot. It's 20 minutes a day.
Yeah, 20 minutes a day, 5 days a week. That's for me. I've engaged in healthy living for the last 4 years with mindful eating and a workout regimen, 5 days a week. With aerobics and light weights. And that is, and what I do in the morning, it just like jump starts my whole day.
It does. And then you feel accomplished. Like I did something. Mm-hmm. I did something good for me. I tell the kids all the time, you don't need to do any exercise that you don't like. Find what you like. Exercise should not be torture. You know, do you like running? Do you like being on the elliptical? Do you like weights? Do you like yoga? Is it just stretching right now that the only thing that you can do? Start somewhere. Just move your body.
And just asking them what speaks to them is empowering. And that's what we need to do, is empower young adults to know that they have choices. They can make choices in the presence of, quote unquote, adult authority figures who they might have viewed as not totally understanding where they were coming from. So I think anything we can do, big or small, to empower them, I think is going to really help to further not only the therapeutic relationship with those teenagers, with those parents, because when you're dealing with teenagers, as you know, Carrie, family's part of the deal. That's their universe.
Yes. And actually, when you talk about exercise, I've had a lot of conversations with parents who are like, well, they're doing yoga, but they need to be running. No, they don't. They need to be doing whatever they feel is right for their body.
Yeah.
And that's okay, as long as they're moving. And we don't need to dictate to them what that needs to look like, because then they're just going to forget it.
No. They may also be turned off to yoga because they're going to say, well, the heck with that. They'll make a statement.
Right.
And in doing so, what they're doing is hurting themselves by depriving themselves of an activity that was previously joyful because of their response to an authority figure whose approach they didn't agree with.
Absolutely. You know, it was interesting. During COVID, there were some kids that I worked with that picked up really interesting, amazing hobbies that they would have never done while their life was going on and they were overscheduled and all that. And I had some kids who all of a sudden picked up woodworking or just learning a foreign language for fun. And it was like some random language, you know? And I always said to the parents, I said, the moment you ask them, did you do it today? They're going to stop. Mm-hmm. So when they feel like it's a chore, when they feel like it's something they have to do, they're going to back away from that. So just enjoy it. Ask them great questions about their projects and their interests, but don't get on them about, well, you have to do it every day.
No, I mean, you could ask them questions like, what drew you to that project? Kind of progress are you making on your project?
Show me what you're doing.
I'm interested. Take an interest in that.
Yeah.
It's just simple things. You don't need to have a higher education degree to figure that out. If you take an interest in what somebody is doing, you're going to build a relationship as long as you take a genuine interest in that.
Yes.
And you release any expectations you have for, you know, for when they're going to complete it, or if they have to complete it, let them get into the joy of doing something that's feeding their soul.
Right. It's the process. It's not necessarily the outcome.
If there's one thing you want to leave our listeners with, or one thing with subcategories, I'm good with that too. What would that be today?
The simple things make a difference. I think because they're simple, they're overlooked. You know, I have an entire chapter about water. Like, you need to drink water. We need to be hydrated. It makes such a difference in our physical and our mental health. So these small things, sleep, getting your phones out of your bedroom, that way you can sleep. Like, it's the simple, simple stuff that doesn't cost us money that we could easily start doing tomorrow. But people are always looking for like this bigger work. Come back to the simple stuff. Come back to the basics and the foundations. And it really does make a difference.
And if I may, I would add one thing to that. And I tell my young adults all the time, all this, don't let anybody steal your mojo.
Absolutely.
I know in the beginning when we were reading your bio, your contact information was listed. But specifically, if they want to get both parts one and two of your book for parents and teens, what's the best way for them to do that, Carrie?
Mental Health Uncensored, 10 Foundations Every Parent Needs to Know, and the Teen Workbook are both on Amazon.
Perfect. I'll make sure your contact information and the book information gets into the episode notes when we go public. So, Carrie, thank you so much. I had a really enjoyable conversation with you today. And again, I hope we can do this again in the future.
I would love to. Thank you so much.
My pleasure. And with that, that is a wrap on another episode of the Teaching Journeys podcast. I'm your host, Dave Roberts, wishing you peace.